Ready to level up your leadership? This is The Growth Project. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Growth Project podcast. Today is a really exciting episode because there's been a lot of talk and focus on mental health recently in the advent of Are You Okay Day, and I've seen a lot of discussion on LinkedIn and social media, which is really exciting. And because the reason I say it's exciting is because it's an issue I think that we don't give enough attention to in the workplace. We tend to see work life and personal life as separate, but we sometimes forget that adversity and great times in personal life are a part of the human experience, and it's impossible to separate that. So I have a guest who I've been having a bit of dialogue with recently, and we have a bit of a loose, link in how we've sort of come to talking with each other. But I'm going to introduce Tercia Woodenberg, who is a learning and development professional and also a counselling professional. So she's going to have some really amazing insights to offer you today. So Tercia, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Jason. I'm really glad you reached out to me.
Absolutely. I think what seemed obvious to me was that we shared some very similar values when I stumbled across your content on LinkedIn. And of course, we discovered that we had a mutual connection.
John.
Absolutely. And when I spoke to John about the fact that we had spoken and planned to do this, his face lit up and said, "You won't regret it."
So, thank you, John.
Tercia, would you mind maybe just giving a bit more of a comprehensive introduction of yourself?
Thanks, Jason. I was in the training and education industry for over 25 years. So I started from a role in coordination and then moved up into compliance management, to management roles, and then to CEO. So it's been a vast learning area and experience for over 25 years. And really, my whole highlight of training and education and the passion and the whole focus of delivery for students is a big drive for me. I think it's really critical that we look at the whole of individuals, how they are in the workspace, emotionally, mentally, and physically. From my background of 25 to 28, I had mental and emotional challenges, more about the fact that I lost my dad. I was going through a major breakup after a number of years married. And having that separation and having to deal with that led me into the pathway of leaving my high-end job, which I loved, to follow a passion that I've always had of holistic counseling and using the whole mental wealth, well-being space to focus on specific areas of encouraging individuals to take care of their mental health, because that's what helped me dealing with my own holistically.
And I see this kind of, progression more and more these days, where people seem to come to a point in their life where, and it often comes with facing adversity, where we start to reprioritize things. It sounds like that's what you faced.
Absolutely. I had to reprioritize. I had to actually think about what it is that I actually want in life. What is it that I need to change? What is it that I need to reset? Because it's a reset, because you go on this journey of just working and making sure that you reach a specific position, and you don't focus on your well-being as an individual. It organically had to take place when I started my reset and my journey, to recognize that some things needed to stop and I needed to take a moment and find out what is it that I needed as an individual. What was my passion? What is it that that made me feel that I needed to be connected to? And even though training and education has always been my passion, and it still is because I use it in my holistic practices, it's also a fundamental rule when we're in an organization that as leaders, that we also take care of our mental health and well-being.
Yeah, this is such a critical point, isn't it? Because I think what a lot of people don't tend to remember or realize is that the significant impact that leaders can have, both positively and negatively, depending on where they are in their life and how they're coping with things. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It impacts on everything. It impacts on your decision making. It impacts on your resilience. It impacts on all levels. And really, the focal is that leaders are supposed to be the individuals that are the leaders and communicate and deal with their employees effectively. But if your mental health is not taken care of, how can you actually align your organization's visions?
Absolutely.
With yourself and your employees if you're not feeling emotionally stable.
Absolutely. And the way that your mental health can be impacted is so broad because we've got things coming at you from every which angle. And I think what tends to happen for a lot of people is as they age, and I'm noticing as well, is that there are all these extra pressures and the other pressures that you've learnt to deal with and manage don't go away. They're still there, but there's just more and more and more. And the weight of it can get so heavy. And absolutely, as you said, it comes to work and we can't stop that as much as you'd like to try. Yeah.
No, you can't, because there's an expectation that you need to meet a specific standard. And so when you're in the workplace, you need to meet that standard. And whether you are emotionally drained from your personal life, you still have to continue dealing with everyday situations. What I've found is that in organizations, emotional intelligence and being aware of your situation and having the resilience and empathy and self-awareness within yourself can lead on to understanding and connecting with employees as well and understanding what they're going through.
Yeah, 100%. And you touched on emotional intelligence, which is something that that I talk a lot to people about when I'm running training sessions around leadership, because it seems to be the topic that when once you mention it, you can see the people squirming in their seats almost. And, oh, no, he said the E word. But what I'm learning is that the growth, professional growth or personal growth can't really occur without enhancing your emotional intelligence and keeping things in check and having strategies and tools.
Absolutely. Absolutely, because we have to model a specific behavior. And if we don't have emotional intelligence to be able to model specific behaviors, then we can't perform on the level that is expected. Our employees can't communicate with us, so there's no effective communication because we're not self-aware. We don't have the capacity to actually be in tune with our employees to be able to understand what they are going through and whether there's a need for us to actually work with them or mentor them as well. So when you start with your own emotional intelligence and emotional well-being, then you have the capacity to be a better leader. I fully believe that. A better leader, which in turn helps your employees have the ability to communicate with you and feel that they can trust you with any challenges that they're going through as well.
Yes, definitely, because people tend to have a guard up, don't they? And especially if we don't have those evolved skills, we can be seen as quite emotionally unpredictable. and yes. and people don't feel safe with that. So we will, there's a ceiling on where trust levels, I think, is the biggest thing that puts a ceiling on trust levels. And once there's a ceiling on trust levels, that there's nothing, nothing's going to improve until you raise that ceiling.
You can't break it down.
Yeah.
Because it becomes, there's a separation. There's a separation between the employer and the employee. And so when we have that separation, there's no trust or a foundation of trust that can be built. Individuals start falling behind. They call in sick from work. They don't come in. They have all these particular excuses. Whereas if they were able to have the ability to trust and communicate, or us as leaders are able to be aware that something really is happening and there's a disconnect, so something must be happening in the home front, we can deal with it effectively.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a tricky thing for a leader to learn to notice and act on. And I think if I think about my leadership journey, I'm not sure if you can relate to this, but I think when I first became a leader, it was such an overwhelming situation because there were not only technical expectations for me to take on more responsibility and things that I wasn't necessarily familiar with, and then working with people and being a leader of people, I found myself kind of in a bit of a spin and just finding things, oh, okay, well, I had this recipe. I just need to be friendly, polite, yeah. but firm and assertive, and that's it.
Yeah.
And then I'm a leader.
Yeah, pretty much. That's what you think, right?
Yeah. Do you see that a lot with your clientele?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And the whole idea is that you don't want to be seen as the bad person either, right? Mm. But you do in places where you have to make specific decisions. It's really hard to have that balance. I think it's important that when you are a leader, that you are fair and you communicate effectively, and that the vision of the business is aligned to how you are and your passion. And I think having emotional intelligence and understanding how you operate as an individual, emotionally, physically, and spiritually, actually makes you a better leader. I fully, fully, and firmly believe that.
Yeah.
Because then you have the practical skills that you're able to align and teach others or mentor others in your workspace, which just leads on to all other areas improving.
Yeah, and on the theme, though, of I guess we're sort of dancing around the fringes of the theme of emerging leaders, right? So,
yes.
So, and this is something that I think, and I'm speaking generally across all workplaces here, is that I think we can do better in terms of progressing people into leadership roles, because the industry that I predominantly work in, what tends to happen is that someone gets recognized for their outstanding performance, technical knowledge, technical ability, and then the logical step is, well, this person's the next logical person for the leadership opportunity. And I guess there can sometimes be a perception that the expectation is that this person is a born leader and has the skills to lead, and off you go. Now go and just make it happen. Yeah. Keep your team running well. And sometimes the development stops there or doesn't accelerate the way maybe it should.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And so somebody is put into a position that has no skills whatsoever, but also is not under a mentorship program where they can have supervision and coaching and training for them to actually be led into that specific role based on the recognition of the amazing work they're doing.
Mm.
Because you can be an amazing worker, you can outshine everyone, but you can't, if you don't have the ability to be a great leader, then that all falls to mush. So it's important that there needs to be more framework for individuals that are recognized as outstanding individuals in their workspace, but have a pathway for their growth.
Yeah.
Another area on the other spectrum is that when individuals are really great at what they do, some leaders are not very welcome to give them the tools and strategies to teach them because they're afraid that then their position will be taken.
Yeah.
So it's a really backflip of both. I had an amazing leader a number of years ago, and she mentored me from the beginning of when I started my role right up to where I was in a position where I would take her job. And she said to me, "There's no more room for you to grow. I have taught you everything that you need to move." And I believe that's a great leader because she's not afraid to teach and mentor for you to have your abilities and grow with the organization. Because when you have individuals that grow in the organization, you keep them there because you're recognizing their talents. You're recognizing their abilities to be an asset to the organization. So why not train them and develop them to be better assets to your organization?
Can I ask a question about that? Because whilst you were explaining that, I had this thing resonating in my mind about the theme of people holding on and guarding their expertise or not providing that mentoring out of fear of perhaps, their own positions or even more career progression. And because I talk so much about this and I have had some people actually in training programs outwardly say to me, "But why should I give that person the ticket to the next promotion that I want?" Or if we have a restructure, my position's now at threat. So, my response to those kinds of thoughts are, well, if you're after the next level up in your leadership journey, what better way to stand out as an outstanding leader than to bringing people along and developing people? If I'm choosing the next senior manager, that's the person I'm looking for. And do you think that potentially ties back to the emotional intelligence piece?
100%.
Yeah.
100%. Because you have your own insecurities, and if you are not willing to share your knowledge that others can learn, that's something that sits within yourself. What is the shortcomings that you have as an individual that you are afraid and insecure that somebody else will take your position? If you are comfortable within your role and you understand all the mechanics of your position, then you shouldn't be afraid of anyone else taking over your position, because you know that there's still room for growth for you. Understanding how other individuals are not going to be a threat, but more a fundamental for you to actually take on and go, "Wow, that individual is there because of me, because of the knowledge that I have shared." And so you are creating a legacy for other individuals.
I couldn't agree more with that. Just to rewind on one of the points you just made as well, I would love your thoughts on this. What would you say to the person who might be, because you said if the person thinks and knows that they have the skills and the knowledge and the ability to do their job, they shouldn't feel threatened. What would you say to the person who might be feeling deep down that they don't actually have the skills and capability to lead effectively and might be aware of it, but are worried about having that show? What would you say to that person who might be thinking, this person's better than me, or I don't know what I'm doing here, I don't know what the right thing to do is?
I think when you're in that particular position, you need to own your faults.
Yeah.
Right? When you start taking ownership of recognizing that there are some areas that you are lacking, that you need to have training, then you need to talk to your manager and say, I'm lacking in these particular abilities. I know I'm effective in all these areas, but I need a little bit more training in this area. Because I think that the fear of losing your job outweighs the fact that you know that you need more training and guidance. The information that you're passing on to another individual is what you've learned. But if you can start being a role model and understanding that if I'm learning and saying that these are my areas of weaknesses that I need to improve on, you're creating a culture of everyone wanting to learn and think outside of the square. Because the problem is that we always think that we have to be perfect, that we have to be these human beings that are always on par and are at this high level of thinking. And that if we actually admit that there are some areas that we are lacking in, it's seen as we're not good enough.
And that's this is a really great point, and I'm reminded of a colleague and dear friend of mine who will often, if I'm having a challenge with something, there's a couple of things that I think leaders should also keep in mind. One great asset is I think vulnerability, and being also comfortable not to seek guidance and mentoring from above you in the org chart, but why not below you as well?
Yeah.
You know, why Absolutely. Not below you? And often sometimes when we're having these thoughts that are making us feel threatened, my friend and colleague will often ask me, but is that the reality or is that just the story you're telling yourself? And often it's the latter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And you know, one of the things that I fully believe is we're always learning and we can learn from everyone. As a holistic counselor, I learn. I learn every day because recognizing that individual stories when they come to me, and there are various stories, and some of them, you tend to look at yourself and recognize that, wow, I thought this was bad about myself. And I've been critical or hard on myself for this particular area. But then you recognize that there's so many other individuals that are doing it even more tough and are suffering from identity crisis of who they are. Most individuals go into positions or jobs because there's a need to keep up with their finance. They have to take care of a family. So that's the motivation. Some, it's not their passion, right?
Yeah.
So it's thinking about it from a leadership point, if this is your passion and you enjoy it, what pathway do I need to follow in order to stay where I love?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with all of that. And it makes so much sense and so critical as well. Can I ask, what would be some advice you would give the emerging leader? Maybe someone's just been made a supervisor or is really stepping into their into the early stages of their leadership career. What would you say to people that they perhaps should expect in terms of, you know, pressures, threats to mental health and I guess the threats of lack of development? What would be the first advice you'd give to somebody?
My advice to somebody that is stepping into a leadership role is to ensure that they communicate. They communicate what their fears are, what their shortcomings are, and ask for the training that they need in those areas. Say that they need supervision in those particular areas. I also think that they need to actually go on workshops.
Yeah.
Workshops on learning about emotional intelligence, I think, is a key part of particular areas. Going on workshops to understand how staff think, their staff think, how individuals think, thinking, do a training needs analysis of what their shortcomings are, and then identify those gaps that they need to upskill in is really, really important. But I think the fundamental is understanding emotional well-being.
Absolutely.
If you understand yourself emotionally and physically and spiritually, then you don't have those hiccups of or hurdles, because you start becoming self-aware of all the shortcomings you have, and you're not afraid to go forward and deal with those shortcomings and learn, read resources, using resources. It's just all about learning, really. Learning is a fundamental key, whether you are a student or a leader. You've got to keep on learning about yourself. You've got to keep learning of ways to improve where you are lacking. Communication is a massive thing that also goes in hand with emotional intelligence. Understanding yourself as an individual is also important, because if you don't understand yourself and your mechanics and how you work and how you think and operate, you're going to be finding it difficult to be in a leadership role and being able to communicate effectively with your other individuals.
Agreed. Absolutely agreed. What seems logical to me is to move into, I guess, an area where if you're not sure where your maybe some of your deficiencies lie in a leadership position, I believe that one of the areas where it will smack you in the face and tell you where your deficiencies are is conflict and conflict situations.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Conflict resolution is a massive thing. How to deal with conflict in the workplace, and also not to take it personally. Because yeah, when we're dealing with situations, especially with conflict, it's hard not to take that. And basically, when you understand about conflict and conflict resolution, you're able to create more of a harmonious culture, workplace culture, because you're dealing with it from a harmonious point of view, as opposed to adding fire and creating more conflict in those particular areas.
Yeah, definitely. So when it comes to actually going into a conflict scenario, what we try and promote is to build a simple set of tools to regulate yourself and to try and influence the other person's emotional state and keep them regulated as well. One of the biggest challenges for me personally improving my conflict engagement skills, I like to frame it as we're engaging with conflict, as it, because we can't necessarily always resolve. But if we're engaging with conflict, one of the really challenging things to do is I know I've got tools that are effective if I use them. Sometimes though, there's this little voice in your head, isn't there, that, oh no, this isn't the time for that. You need to go forward and swing the sledgehammer. And there's that little part of your brain that's going, no, this, forget all those tools. We need authority here. We need compliance here. This person just needs to listen and accept it. And would you agree sometimes it's switching off or not listening to that voice is the critical thing to do?
Being one of the key parts of emotional regulation is not to be reactive.
Yep.
And when we start learning the arts of regulating our emotions, then we are not reactive, or we're not listening to that back of the to deal with this, because we are putting ourselves in a place of empathy and compassion, and actually placing ourselves with understanding that if we were in that role, how would we actually see it? So we start understanding that we need to not listen to the back voice, because sometimes when it's in conflict as well, and there's a whole lot of conflict, remember there's also the fight, flight and freeze response. So there's that whole survival mechanics that starts happening. And so it's important that we actually understand, because when we want to fight, that's when the conflict starts happening. And so when we start this whole fight of conflict, somebody wants to flee from it as well.
Yeah.
because everybody is in survival mode. So when you're fighting and this other individual is also there, each one of you is in survival mode and trying to defend oneself. So it's really, really important that the leader is the one that is showing that they can regulate their emotions and be able to communicate effectively in an assertive way. Remember that also anger is an emotion, right? A lot of individuals talk, we have this whole idea that you're not allowed to get angry. You're not allowed to feel specific emotions because if you show different vulnerabilities, then you're not seen as a great manager.
Mm.
Or your assertiveness need to be more dominant as opposed to having an effective communication skills without that I am the authority.
Yeah.
And you will do as I say.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not effective, is it?
Mm. No. You get more out of having compassion and empathy and self-awareness and being able to regulate your emotions to speak to an individual on their level.
And it can be so hard to do, though, can't it? As you're building those skills and that emotional intelligence, it can be so difficult to overcome that urge to be authoritative.
Yes. Because we've been designed that way.
Yeah.
That when you're in a position, in that particular position, it's your way or the highway.
Yeah.
This is what needs to be done. And if you don't do it this way, then I remember I worked for an organization many, many years ago. And her method of doing things was you're all soldiers doing a job and don't let the door hit you on your way out.
Yeah.
And so everyone was fearful of her because that's how she saw everyone, that you were just a soldier doing a job.
Yeah.
And if you didn't like it, there was the door. But a lot of individuals are not in that position to leave. So even though they feel they're under duress, they stay.
Yeah.
Whereas if you embrace or improve the workplace culture through your leadership,
yep,
you have a better collaborative team.
I agree. Just to circle back as well on, we were talking a little bit more, earlier about leadership development and some of the things that we should be doing. And you mentioned workshops, and I just wanted to put a bit more of a spotlight on that as well, because this is something that I'm seeing that is maybe that I'm becoming more of a fan of as well, as opposed to maybe longer form, structured, lengthy training programs. I love workshops because they're more discussion based, they're shorter form.
Absolutely.
It's a bit more micro, a bit more digestible. Would you agree with
absolutely.
That?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So with my background in training and development, I've started putting on a series of wellness workshops. And that incorporates those particular areas because I think it's really, really important to understand that you don't have to have these long-winded workshops that go on for 10 weeks or that you need just the critical areas to be dealt with. Managing stress in the workplace, emotional intelligence is a really, really big one that is really important. How to deal with conflict. But all of them need to have a spin on mental health.
Yes, they do, don't they? Yeah.
Because it's not just about the business context of managing conflict. The business context of stress in the workplace, how to deal with it. There needs to be short, brief areas of, okay, if you have somebody or you suffering with stress, how can you regulate your emotion? What can you do to help you deal with specific situations where you can also, because individuals as well can also feel, I'm talking about leaders, can also feel overwhelmed when they are required to do specific things in the workplace. So what can they do Meditation is a big thing, right? I'm a big believer in meditation and mindfulness, being aware, self-aware of yourself, using specific tools to regulate your emotions is so important. Breath work, managing is a good tool in the workplace for managing stress. So I definitely think workshops are a really great tool. I find the online programs are also really great, but I find individuals prefer in person.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you have more of a connection when you're in person, and you're able to deal with more and be able to just feel what an individual's feeling more connected, really. You know, the whole concept of is about community, consciousness, creates all of us working together as one.
Yeah, I love the concept of community consciousness. Maybe we could just elaborate on that a little bit more, because I think this is where we're starting to, where you might be building trust levels within a team, for example. If we can look at it from a team perspective, if I'm working at what I'm really trying to achieve is, and I hadn't really had a label for it, but when you said community consciousness, that really resonated with me. I just want to unpack that a little more. How would you say that community consciousness looks within a team environment? What does it mean to have community consciousness?
When we're in a community or a team, and we all on the same platform, and we all start becoming conscious of one another's feelings and awareness of how they operate together, what the strengths and weaknesses in that particular team are, then you start becoming conscious of how they operate and the mechanics of using the ones that have better strengths in these areas to do particular tasks in those areas, and those that are more practical or academic, because everyone learns differently. Understanding the mechanisms of your team, being conscious of it, creates a community in your workspace. And I think it's really, really important when you understand from a conscious perspective of understanding your team and their mechanics, who they are as individuals, you create a community space, which is less inclined for them to leave the operation because you've created this culture of a community.
Yes. And culture in the workplace is so critical, isn't it? It can really define how well we perform as a team or a business entirely based on the culture that we build.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, you know, we come from an era sometimes where mental health is only now becoming more and more widespread. It hasn't really been tapped into in organizations. We have employee wellness, and we have all these different programs, but it's not a fundamental area that has been pushed to say it's a requirement. It's a requirement because it's such a broad spectrum. And you can break it down into so many different areas. But I think if in our workspaces that it's actually nutted down into a specific framework for organizations to have a model, exactly like you have your values and your mission statements of what your organization stands for, you can have that as part of your induction.
Yeah, yeah. Let's get it out in the open as dialogue from the get-go.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And once you have that as an induction, as part of your induction process, everyone is coming at the same level and understanding that employee well-being, employer well-being is a critical component of our government, of our organization, and it governs how we actually deal with all areas in our workplace.
Yeah, it's such amazing insights. And thanks for unpacking that community consciousness with me, because I thought that what resonated in my mind was accurate with what you described, but I hadn't had that label before. So I went, oh, I think I know what she's talking about there. Let's tap into that. What would you say?
It's a big thing.
It's a big, yeah.
Sorry, Jason. I think it's a really, really big thing. And my whole motto and my value system is aligned to that with my practice as well.
Wonderful. Can I ask you, what would you say to people? We spoke earlier about the fact that as life progresses, you start to take on more and more pressures and things start to build up. Sometimes people can be just struggling through and trying to find ways to muscle through difficulty during life, which, you know, will be built up of an accumulation of things from personal life and professional life. What sort of things could people look out for in themselves and in other people that might be telling that they might be having some struggles with their mental health?
Mistakes, constant mistakes, even though they've been guided or given specific tasks. Not meeting those deadlines constantly, but yet prior to that, they were meeting those deadlines.
Yep.
Then obviously something is off.
Yep.
If they start withdrawing and they not communicating as much as they used to, calling in sick, giving different excuses about being sick could be a reason that something is going on. You will find sometimes some individuals start becoming nervous in the workspace because the pressures become too much. They can't articulate what they need because they're afraid they will lose their job. So that becomes a massive issue. I also think, I know that a lot of organizations have the employment assistance program in their workspace.
Mm.
But sometimes it's really individuals, again, very much don't feel comfortable with having those conversations because then it may be on record. And then if it's on record, then it goes to the manager. And if it goes to the manager, then they may lose their job.
So and that comes really, back to the culture, doesn't it, that we've set?
It comes back to the culture that's been set.
Mm.
So it's really, really important to start and once you as a leader are emotionally aware, then you can pick that up because you already understand your team. You understand how they operate. And as soon as there's a decline in particular areas, you're able to pick that up very quickly because it's like, hang on a minute. I've always got outstanding work from this individual, but now there's a lot of errors. Something is going wrong.
Yeah.
But I also believe that when somebody comes in, a new individual comes into a workplace or they're starting out and they've been there a while and they make an error, I think it's also important that if an individual makes an error in any particular task that's major, that it needs to be explained as opposed to that explain the ramifications of what has happened because of that error.
And not so focusing on the issue and not the person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How this actually impacted that, how that error impacted on the organization, impacted how much has lost and how this can't happen again because of the actual impact.
Yeah.
Because so often it's aimed at the individual, and there's a thing about the I statement, right?
Yeah.
And with the I statements, normally when you say you, the defense comes up, right?
Yeah.
But when you use the I statements, it's like, I feel disappointed. it changes the whole dynamic.
Because, as opposed to you've disappointed me.
Yeah. Because then automatically the person, individual's guard is not up because you're talking about, I feel disappointed about how this has occurred. How can we fix it?
I'm so on board with that. I'm a big fan of the I statement. In fact, I did an entire episode about I statements.
I did.
And I think this is one of the tools that I work with people to equip them with, to go and when, you know, going into a potentially conflict situation, or if we're having to give some critical feedback or things like that. I'm so on board with that, and I'm thrilled that you brought that up, because I think it's such a powerful way to go into those conversations. While we can still address an issue whilst maintaining trust levels and things not getting out of hand.
Absolutely. And it shifts the whole dynamic of everything because you're explaining the impact. So what happens is now the individual becomes more conscious.
Yeah.
Of the impact it would have, not only on them, but on everybody else.
And, you know, when you point that out to people, I think that has such a big impact, because no one's coming to work going, I want to cause disruption for my team today. No one wants that. So if we just point out the impact, that's enough. They know that, okay, my mistake led to this. They don't have to. You don't have to point that out, do you?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It's about how can we work, fix this so that it doesn't occur again because of that, but not making them feel inadequate.
Yeah. So when it comes to we started there about how can we see signs that someone might be struggling, and we, you know, how that can manifest, and sort of one of the big themes was there could be performance issues and mistakes and things like that. If we do recognize that and we have the realization that, oh, look, Fred looks like he might be struggling, I'm seeing some things, and we know that "Are you okay?" is a thing that's promoted as checking in on people, but some people find it really difficult to go into those conversations. How would you suggest that people can approach it if they're feeling a little uncomfortable with it, or if they're concerned that they might be crossing a line or something like that?
Most of the time, people don't want to talk. And because they feel embarrassed or there's shame attached to it. So they don't feel comfortable talking about those particular situations. But I think that if you have a conversation to say, again, I have noticed.
Yeah.
I have noticed that you've been distracted lately. I've noticed that you have been feeling ill. Is there something that you want to talk about? And if you are not ready to talk about, remember that I am here and I have noticed.
Yeah.
And I'm here to support you in any way that I can. Don't keep it all in or keep it to yourself. There's a space of safety, of trust, and confidentiality.
Yeah.
But leave it to them to be ready to come to you, because sometimes they don't, especially amongst males.
Yeah.
I have male clients, and even when they come, it's that whole going through the whole conversation and unpacking slowly until they eventually feel that they can trust to open up. And it really, really is a critical point in the workspace, is that they don't feel threatened, that even if they speak about what their issue is, that they're not going to lose their job for it.
Yeah. So, again, that culture, isn't it? If we make them feel safe in the workplace from day one, that this is a safe place to be human and have human.
Yeah.
Issues that we have to deal with as people, this is this is where it's critical. It highlights as so critical to set that culture from the start.
It's all about culture, setting the culture from the start, setting those requirements from the start. When everyone understands what your non-negotiables are and what you are willing to negotiate and be open about, then everyone knows from the beginning, This is what my expectations are, what we expect, and this is what we won't accept. But yeah. We're here as an organization to be able to coach and mentor and be there for you and create the safe and harmonious space. Not everyone's going to come to the party with it anyway, right? You are going to get those individuals that are not going to perform or not interested in performing, but it's on them because they're not willing to change their mindset either. Because it's all about mindset again. Changing your mindset, changing the way you are thinking comes from the top, but everybody else also has to look at things different. When you move an individual from one position and you move them into a management role, but they haven't been expecting it and they feel that they don't have the capacity, it's a mindset because they're still in the mindset of the admin position that they had, and now they have to change their mindset to be a manager. But if they don't have the guidance or the mentoring system or the framework in order to transition, their mindset is still as admin.
Absolutely.
That makes sense.
Yeah, it does really make a lot of sense. Mm-hmm. And I think the other thing that also happens is that if someone hasn't done that work or hasn't had the development that they need as a leader, statistically there was a study, I can't remember the name of the study, but the study showed that where there is a lack of development in leadership for people who become leaders, there is a significant increase in the chances that that person will display abusive leadership behaviours as well, which makes sense, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, I've been more than 25 years in training and development, and through my pathways, and I'm sure yourself, Jason, as well, I've seen it. I've been on the other side of it where I've had that bullying or abuse. But when you make a decision that you're not going to stand for that, then because that's not what your culture or who you are as an individual represents, then you remove yourself from that culture.
Yeah.
Because you don't want to be associated with the culture of an organization that is part of bullying and harassment, right?
Yeah.
But lots of individuals don't have that capacity to leave.
Yeah, that's right. It can be really trapping, can't it?
It can be trapping.
Yeah, it can feel like you've got no option but to put up with it and find a way to cope.
Yes.
But you have to accept that if you do make a decision that you're going to try and find ways to cope, it is going to erode away at your mental health.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. But again, with managers, if they are not aware and don't have emotional intelligence at all or not willing to have emotional intelligence, they will continue that same pathway.
Yeah.
It won't change.
It becomes the norm. Yeah, absolutely. Tertia, I really want to just take a minute to thank you so much for your time. I do have to wrap this one up, but
It's
been fantastic connecting, and we need to keep the conversations going, but we maybe should touch base again in the future. But thank you so much for your time. Can you maybe give people some details on how they can check out your work and where to find you?
Oh, absolutely. So my website is called Soulcheck Holistic Therapy. www.soulcheck.co.nz. I'm actually internationally accredited. So I do counseling and wellness across the board. So check out my website and see all the amazing things I do.
Fantastic. And we'll pop the link in the show notes as well here. And absolutely, you should also connect with Tertia on LinkedIn as well, where, you know, you're generous with sharing your insights as well on LinkedIn. So I would definitely recommend that as well. But Tertia, again, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you so much for your time, Jason. Appreciate it.
There you have it, folks. Thanks for tuning in for another episode of The Growth Project. I'm really enjoying the interaction, so please keep the messages and emails coming through. Keep an eye out for our upcoming Frontline Leader Mindset workshops at enatrain.com.au. They're in Sydney and Melbourne. And of course, you can reach out to request a private customized workshop for your team. Again, that's enatrain.com.au. That's enatrain.com.au. What would really help us send our leadership insights far and wide is 5-star ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, or even just share the show with your network, family, and friends. Until the next episode, look after yourself and look after your teams.